What is everybody and welcome to the All-NBA Show, part of the All-City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Mattes, and I'm joined by Tim Legler. Legs, we can never take 3 days off again, man. 3 days of playoff basketball. Last night in particular was unbelievable. As good a night as you can get in the NBA.
A lot going on over the weekend, man. We had a great start here, but nothing compares so far over those first weekend. Nothing compared on Saturday, Sunday to what we saw last night, obviously. Two great finishes, two ways of looking at both games. I think you always have the perspective of what the team that ended up losing the game could have done differently. Do you blame them or do you credit the teams that took it? I think each of these games a little bit different in that regard. We're going to cover all that.
I think you're right, but that's what it is. Two buzzer beater, one true buzzer beater, and another one that came down to the final seconds with a miracle. I'm, of course, talking about Nuggets-Lakers, which we'll talk about first. We're going to talk about Knicks 76ers on 99.9% of the nights. That would have been the top story, but somehow gets bumped to segment two. And then, of course, we're going to talk Mavs, Magic-Cavs, Mavs-Clippers, Pacers-Bucks, and Suns Wolves as well as we preview for tonight's game. But first, we are presented as always by DraftKings Sportsbook. Stay tuned. You'll learn more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, we have a lot to pack into 1 hour show here, Legs. So let's get right into it. The Lakers were up 20 points, I believe 19 points actually, in halfway through the third quarter. 19 points. And had controlled a lot of the game. Anthony Davis was on fire. D'Angelo Russell was on fire. The Lakers made tough shots. And then halfway through the third quarter, the Nuggets started chipping away at it, They got it close in the fourth quarter, but the Lakers kept making big shots. You can't blame the Lakers for missing opportunities. They hit shots in the clutch. They made plays, but Denver just made more. They had a 200 offensive rating in the final 5 minutes of this game, meaning they scored on average 2 points per trip down the court. In the final 5 minutes of the game, how's that for execution? And the Nuggets steal a game, an unbelievable thievery of a game, 101-99. What stood out to you about this one, Legs?
Yeah, all right. So let's set the stage for it. It's 74-55 by my recollection, and I'm looking here at the box and play-by-play. 7:15 left in the third quarter. I think that's as big as it got. Yep. And at that point, what was happening on the Lakers' offensive end looked like something the Nuggets had not remotely come close to figuring out. And that's because of the way Anthony Davis was playing. It's really him. LeBron was playing well. LeBron overall had a very good night. LeBron made some big plays on both ends. This was about Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis was unguardable. He was just unstoppable. He's such a great mid-range player. They were running a two-man game. He was getting the little slip into the foul line area. He was hitting that shot consistently. If they did take that away and he rolled down to the post, anytime he got single coverage, he was getting to something good, turnaround jumper, jump hook, whatever he wanted to do. At one point, 13 for 14, I believe he was, from the field in the game. I mean, unstoppable. And then everything sort of shifted from that point. And you're up 19. The Lakers, I think you make the decision – to guard Jokic single coverage at that point, I think, because, you know, how do you erase a 20-point deficit? You're gonna need some 3-point shooting.
Yeah.
And they were so cautious about giving that up that they decided to play him single coverage. I don't have a problem with the way they defended Jokic in the beginning of that. Once they got that thing down to 10, 8, 6, and you're still trying to play him single coverage, no, at some point, you know how that's going to result. That is going to be a great shot for Nikola Jokic. You're not stopping him with unlimited dribbles in the post. I don't care who the defender is. He's going to get what he wants. So that was something that I think Darvin Ham was probably struggling with. You know, what do we do here? At some point, it becomes obvious to you. And they never really did that late. And then on the other end of the Florida Lakers, they really got away from what they were doing well and how difficult that set had been, LeBron AD ball screen, to stop. They got away from that. It allowed the Nuggets to catch their breath and start chipping away at this lead. And now you can just feel the energy in the building, the momentum, and everything was going their way. And even with all that said, Adam, it really still took a couple of jumpers made by the Lakers at key times, and they win the game. Right. And obviously, the biggest one is LeBron's wide open three, you know, inside of 15 seconds that he took, that I don't think he had any intention of taking that early. But once he saw KCP fall, he's naked, he takes the shot. He probably thinks it's the best shot we're going to get on this possession. So he took that three, leaving a lot of time left for Denver to take the last shot. But there were others. Austin Reaves missed one. Hachimura missed one. These are huge shots. Like, you stall momentum, it probably gives you enough of a cushion to get a stop and win the game. And it didn't happen. So, you know, things sort of had to fall in place on both ends for the Nuggets over that last 18 minutes, and it really did. They couldn't have played better offensively. They got exactly what they wanted pretty much every trip. And then defensively, I think they were helped by the Lakers getting away from what their strong suit was to that point in the game.
Well, one of the reasons they got away from it, you know, Anthony Davis being guarded by Jokic, LeBron being guarded by Aaron Gordon. You know, you said Anthony Davis a great mid-range player. He's not the best mid-range shooter. I think 43% from 10 to 16 feet this year, 36.5% from on long twos. I think if you're Denver, with the way that you can score, you would concede those shots. And to your point, he was 13 of 14. A hot shooting night for him, you would think, would be like 8 of 14, given his numbers. 13 of 14 on a steady diet of those shots, I think Denver would live with. And Michael Malone even said in his presser, coming out of halftime, Anthony Davis had it rolling in the second quarter. Keep Jokic on him, and let's see if he cools off. Let's see what happens. He did not cool off. He comes out and scores a lot of points right away in the third quarter. So they make a tough decision, and they switch Aaron Gordon onto him. And then they put KCP onto LeBron James. So now you're playing, you know, Aaron Gordon can guard Anthony Davis. That's actually a pretty good battle. But KCP on LeBron is a real mismatch. And Jokic now has to guard Hachimura, which is, you know, out of position. And so what it did was it took away that LeBron-Anthony Davis pick and roll and the D'Angelo Russell-Anthony Davis pick and roll that was finding the little seams for those 10-footers. It took that away. And to my surprise, I think the Lakers didn't know what to go, you know, what to do there. And you have two guys, KCP and Jokic, who are now guarding uncomfortable matchups. It seems like you should have been able to find a new rhythm, but you know, legs, sometimes when you play 30 minutes of a game one way and things change up, even if it changes up in a way you should be taking advantage of, you had established a rhythm, and now that rhythm was disrupted. So I think that was a big part of it, was the Lakers thought, okay, what do we do now? We just did the same thing for 30 minutes, and now we got to change it up, and they never fully got into a rhythm after that.
No, they listen. All right. Well, then, I mean, it sounds like an indictment of Darvin Ham, because I'm sorry, a guy is playing that well offensively in Anthony Davis. He took one shot in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You got to be kidding me. I mean, to that point, he was the best offensive player on the court. How is that possible? You got to figure out another way. Come up with a wrinkle. Do something differently offensively to get him the basketball where he can operate. Nobody on the Nuggets is really going to do an effective job of really guarding him one-on-one when he gets it going like that. Now, there's other nights Anthony Davis doesn't get into that kind of rhythm. And then he drifts a little bit, or he fades. He's not aggressive. He's an easier guy to guard then. You have multiple guys. Michael Porter Jr. could probably guard him on those nights. But the way he was going in this game, nobody they have is going to guard him. You could just tell his confidence was off the charts. He was getting to his spot. His length was the difference. He's shooting soft shots with length over smaller guys. And he for him to disappear sort of the extent to which he did, that's an indictment on him. It's an indictment on Darvin Ham and LeBron too. LeBron's dictating possessions. He can put that ball on his hip and tell anybody to go anywhere he wants to at any time. No one's going to question it. So he can run traffic and direct that as well. He's got to get a feel for the fact that, hey, man, this guy was rolling and cooking, and now he's not involved anymore. And it's not because they were blitzing Anthony Davis every time he touched it to make him give it up. If that's the case, then you've got guys, D'Angelo Russell or Reaves, those guys are getting naked shots. That's what was happening. It just, the action was different. He wasn't getting the ball in those spots at all anymore. And you know, at some point, if you're the Lakers, you sort of get caught in this trap mindset of you're almost kind of waiting for the clock to run out, because you have this lead. You know, you're up 20 on the road against this team, and you have to steal one road game in a series to have a chance to win it. And you think this is it. And I could almost feel a little bit of that. Like it's slipping away, and we really want this clock to run out faster now than making it happen. And so I think it was a combination. Look, rarely will I put a team in their weaknesses and the things they did wrong to blow a game like this. When I look at how well Denver played, I'm going to go there first. Denver was flawless. absolutely flawless when they had to be flawless for a long stretch, including the last play of the game. But the Lakers contributed to it. It's silly to think otherwise. I mean, it's the same thing we're going to talk about in the Knicks-Sixers. It's both. Right. You have to crack the door open, present opportunities, and then somebody's got to pounce on it and cash in, and that's what I felt Denver did in this game.
I think fatigue played a big factor in this too. And you know, obviously playing at altitude, 48-hour turnaround. These are professional athletes, but these games are intense. And I think there was just a wearing down of Anthony Davis. Part of this was, you're right, how do you got it? You've got to find him. He's that on fire. You have to keep going to him. But part of this is also you have to demand the ball. You have to want it. And I think that the part of this was he and LeBron were both pretty exhausted down the stretch of this game. And I think you're right about trying to run the clock out, that there was a sense of the Lakers looking up and going, oh, the Nuggets are making their run. How do we just like waste this time now? And anytime you get into that, you know, you change momentum. There's a sense in a game where one team's trying to take it and the other team's trying to preserve it. And then lastly, Legs, this is my big – I've made this point about several teams as we've talked about getting prepared for the playoffs. And to me, this was the perfect example of this concept. The Nuggets know exactly who they are and what they want to do. And every situation you throw at them, you know who they are in those, you know, when they encounter those problems. So they have a pretty terrible night from Jamal Murray, rough shooting night. They know in the clutch where they're going and what they're going to do. The Lakers have an incredible shooting night from Anthony Davis and D'Angelo Russell. Everything's going right. And yet you get into the clutch and they look less certain of what it is they're trying to do. And to me, that's what the playoffs are all about. Do you know what you are, and are you capable of executing those things under multiple circumstances? Last night was perfection for Denver in that regard. They knew who they were, even on an off night, and they executed perfectly in the clutch.
It felt like the series. I mean, look, you know, you're the Lakers. Could you have played better than you did to that point in the game? You got a sensational night out of Anthony Davis, which is always a barometer for them. That's a measuring stick for their team and how we judge them. He was sensational. No other way to describe it. Through the first 31 minutes of the game. Not so much the last 17. But to that point in the game, I'm saying, to build that lead. You can't get more out of D'Angelo Russell, a guy that was getting absolutely crushed because of his performance in game one. Well, man, talk about answering the call. 7 for 11 from the three. Gives him 23 points. So you always need that third, like, supplemental score. Who's going to augment AD and LeBron? You need one guy to do it at least. If multiple guys do it, then they're going to win the game. At least one, though, D'Angelo Russell did that. You get LeBron James. You know, 9 for 19 is not a great night for LeBron James. That's not horrible. And he had 26 points, 12 boards. So LeBron, and he made some big shots in the fourth quarter down the stretch and a couple big defensive plays. So LeBron did his thing. Yet both stars play great. A role player play phenomenally well. You're up 20. All those things added up, you still lose the game. That smells like series to me. Now, can the Lakers get a game when they change venues? Yeah, they can win game three. They're not winning the series. To have a chance to win the series, and I wouldn't thought they were going to win it anyway if they won last night, but to even have a chance, that's the one you have to get. You will never be in a better position to win a road game, which you're going to have to in the series, than they were last night. And Denver still had an answer. And you know what's funny, Adam, too? They're down 19, and I'm watching the game. And most teams in that situation, we saw it throughout the weekend, teams got down big in some of these games. And you're saying, you know, I think they have a run in them. Like, at some point, they'll probably make a run. When Denver was down 19, it wasn't a matter of if, it was certainty. It was, and they carried themselves like that. They weren't stressed or panicked. You knew the run was going to come. It was just a matter of how lethal. Right? How efficient, and then what was going to happen on the other end? Because you need both things to happen simultaneously. The Lakers also need to come up empty on some important trips. So both things have to get figured out at the same time. But there was no doubt Denver was going to start scoring regularly. You knew it was going to happen. Just didn't know if they were also going to be able to get just enough stops to put them in position for one of their stars to make a play at the end of the game. It turns out that's exactly what happened.
And you were talking about the, you know, how demoralizing this game can be. The Lakers, I've never seen this, Legs. They were on the court for a good 60, 90 seconds after the final buzzer. And that's a heartbreak. You know, you lose a heartbreaker, wave to the other team. You're in the tunnel in 5 seconds, right? You're off the court. You go back to the locker room to regroup. They were in stunned disbelief for the longest I've ever seen a road team in another arena. And there was chaos, you know, people on the court, cameras everywhere, everybody's doing a dog pile. And the Lakers are just kind of looking around at each other in complete disbelief. And so to your point, the only game it reminds me of, at least of LeBron's career, is game one in 2018. The famous J.R. Smith game, right? LeBron James has a 50-point masterpiece and J.R. Smith dribbles the clock out. It reminded me of that because LeBron was so devastated in that moment. And last night, LeBron was so devastated to see that one go that, again, anything can happen. It's basketball. I don't think the Lakers are going to quit. I don't think they're going to lay down and die. But emotionally, this one felt like the life just got sucked out of the team, so much so that they couldn't even leave the court after the final buzzer.
Yeah, and I mean, you totally understand it. You know, that's a game you're in total control of the game. Total control. Everything's going great. You're playing. You can't be playing better, and then that happens. And yeah, I felt actually kind of sorry for Anthony Davis. Of all places to end up after that shot, like you basically completely on his back on the Nuggets bench while this celebration is going on, like literally around him at his feet. He could even stand up. He had to get help to stand up because of the celebration that was going on right in front of him. And by the way, you know, he did what he could on that play. I mean, that's just a very difficult lean back separation by Jamal Murray. Anthony Davis fully extended. It's the difference, though, between an offensive player knowing a nanosecond before the defender what he wants to do, and that little bit of discrepancy in reaction is what creates the separation. Because AD, as you can see, Murray hit him with a little hesitation that made AD lean forward. And then when Murray took one more dribble, AD sort of overreacted to the drive. And now a guy that big, his weight's going toward the basket, toward the baseline. You got to time that thing perfectly and get off the ground to contest it. There was just enough separation there for Murray to make that shot on a night. And he was, nobody described it better than he did, that he struggled with his shooting. And he was starting to get a little bit frustrated. And at one point was talking about, hey, man, facilitating more, not worry about it. Got a lot of encouragement from his team, which is, you know, that's what great teams do. They believe in their guys. They believed in him all the way. And it wasn't just that shot. He made several huge plays down the stretch of that game on a night when he didn't have it. And I'm going to say this about Jokic. I was kind of thinking about this. So they played him single coverage, all those possessions. He was torching Anthony Davis in the low post with unlimited dribbles, like as he would any player in the league. It's not even fair to let a guy that good, that strong, with that kind of footwork, with that kind of touch, to go with no help in the post, as many dribbles as you want, right? But here's the thing. Here's what's crazy. There's no greater testament to Jokic's greatness than this. Darvin Ham is watching this, and Darvin Ham is saying, despite the fact that he's scoring every time down there, well, we can't run a double at him. Then he really becomes unbeatable. Like, what? There is no better compliment you can give a guy than to continue to play him in a way when you know the outcome. You know the outcome. He's going to get off something great for himself. There's no question about it. But he was that afraid of other guys getting wide open three-point looks, so he didn't come. And again, I agree with the strategy early, up 19, 15, 12. When that thing got under single digits and they're still going into Jokic in the post and he's having his way, at some point, I think then you got to dare KCP, you got to dare Aaron Gordon, make a shot, make a three-point shot, because there's going to be possession after possession in which we're taking the ball out of the net, and this, every time we do, the lead is reduced. And it's going to be a matter of time before they've caught us. And I think that's what Darvin Ham was trying to weigh. But again, it's the passing ability, the IQ, the vision, the way he will make the game easy for guys in that situation that made Darvin Ham reluctant to send any help. And as a result, Jokic just had his way, whatever he wanted to do in the post. That set up everything that happened with Jamal Murray.
Yeah. There were so many plays from Denver. And after the game, in the press lounge, I'm talking to Katie Wingy, fantastic sideline reporter for Denver Nuggets broadcast on Altitude. And she's telling me, you know, I'm lucky enough that I always get to be in these huddles because of her job. She gets to be there listening in on the huddles. And she says, the thing about this team is they have such an unbelievable belief in themselves. that in these moments, and you're watching this game, and you know Murray saying like, "I'm going to look for you. I'm going to look for you," and all the guys are saying, "No, no, no, you got this, man. Keep shooting. Don't think about it. We want you shooting. We want you scoring." This team, and we've seen it a time and time and time again, they just seem to believe they're going to win even when they're down 20. And we talk about Denver, what makes them special. They've got good guys that fit together. It's so underrated when you are the best team in the NBA in terms of being connected. All five guys are connected to each other, like on almost on a spiritual level. And it's underrated, the belief factor. They're a team that always all believes in each other and believes in themselves. And the X's and O's, we love to break it down, the skills, the different things. Those two intangibles, they almost aren't intangible. You can almost measure them. And you measure them in games like last night when a team has a 200 offensive rating. Think about the play Michael Porter made. Jamal Murray got, you know, made the last couple plays. Michael Porter gets a three, a bang-bang play. Jokic airballs it. Aaron Gordon rebounds it, kicks it to Michael Porter. He has no time to think. He has to just catch and shoot. Absolutely drains it. It's those types of plays that Denver always makes. And I really believe it's connection and belief that separates them from all these other great teams.
Yeah, it's there's zero doubt. Imagine taking doubt out of the equation on anything related to sports or life or anything you're doing. If that doubt, right? That is what interrupts muscle memory. They don't have doubt. They just know because of their connection to each other and how great Jokic is. Even the last play when they rebound the basketball, immediately take a look. Jokic, two hands. He's waving like toward the sideline, letting Malone know we got this. He's waving everybody to get down immediately. And there's no hesitation there because they inherently trust him. Now, he ended up not being the guy to make the play. Murray made the read, got the switch, and he got to the spot. But it didn't matter. They trusted him completely to say, no, let's just play on right now and let's get this. By the way, the Aaron Gordon offensive rebound, like that's the play that is going to be kind of swept under the rug a little bit. Yep. Other than the game winner, which is obviously the most important play, that is the one that set the stage, that play, because he came from a great distance to get to that basketball, and he and Austin Reeves got there at the same time. He's just bigger. He's stronger. He ripped it away from him, and then he had the wherewithal to sort of keep his feet in bounds on the baseline because he almost stepped out of bounds, and then find someone and deliver a perfect pass. And to your point, Michael Porter Jr., like I can't even believe he got that off clean.
Yeah.
How crowded it was when he caught the ball, and he just went up with no hesitation at all. And it's amazing what winning and trust do to you in those situations. And that's what they look like, man. And that's what, you know, everybody believes it. Everybody that watches them knows it. There's no team you trust more. No team do you trust more to get what they want when they have to have it than the Denver Nuggets. And they did it again last night, time and time again. And again, I think, can the Lakers win a game? Yeah, they can win a game. But that was the chance to really put a scare into Denver in this series. Because, you know, then you go home, let's say the Nuggets win a road game, but it's 2-2. Well, now it's reduced to a, you know, it's reduced at that point to a best of five series. And like a lot of things can happen against two great, great players. So that was the chance, and the Nuggets refused to allow like that level of anxiety to creep into this series. They just refused to let it get there because they have so much confidence in how they're going to execute and how they're going to play down the stretch.
100%. And it's crazy that we got 24 minutes into the show and we barely talked about Jokic. I mean, we mentioned him briefly, but let's go to him now. 27 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists, 9 of 16 shooting, 2 of 4 from 3. By the way, 2 steals on top of it. And, you know, Anthony Davis is an all-time great, and Anthony Davis had an all-time great game, one of his best playoff games, you know, outside the bubble. He had it in this one. And yet, Jokic still impacted the game in an insane way with 27, 20, and 10. Just, you know, I don't even know if this was a good game, Legs. I'm spoiled because I watch every game from him. This felt to me like a – I called it after the game. I said I felt like it was a B game. I'm probably being too harsh on him because of how many things he does. But still, his rhythm was a little disrupted in this game, I thought. What can you say about him and the level he can reach even on a, you know, quote-unquote off night?
Well, that's what's kind of amazing about this. You know, I think that's a fair assessment. I think I maybe wouldn't even have given him a B by his standards up until the fourth quarter. But the fourth quarter was so exceptional, it elevated those other three, the overall grade, and it brings it up to that, right? So it still ended up being, and they put the graphic up last night for playoff games, 25 points, 20 boards, and 10 assists. Four times he's done that. Collectively, in the history of the league, it's happened four times. Yeah. Wilt Chamberlain twice and Kareem once, and I don't even remember now. I'm sorry, I've drawn a blank who the other player was. Somebody else did it.
Cowens.
Dave Cowens. There you go, Dave Cowens. That's it. That's your list. Jokic has done it more times or as many times as the rest of the players who have ever played in the NBA. And here we are wondering, like, yeah, it felt like a good game. Good game. You know, he was so – yeah, that's what it is. And look, I give Barkley credit. I was watching the postgame on Turner. Barkley's saying it, man. I hope we appreciate this guy. I'm not sure we ever will collectively appreciate this until it's gone, unfortunately. But I do because I just – I just have such an appreciation for his absolute understanding of everything that's happening on the court before anyone else does. And it's so far advanced in what's about to happen. And the best part about him, the simplicity with which he plays, it is so beautiful. There's nothing wasted, no wasted dribbles, no wasted movement, no bad shots. Nothing is wasted by Jokic. Everything is purposeful. And that's my favorite thing about him. And you saw it on display in the fourth quarter last night, and him be able to elevate his game offensively on a night when he wasn't great offensively. He was incredible when he needed to be. And Jamal Murray wasn't very good offensively, and he was great when he needed to be. Says an awful lot about the two of them, and just another absolute masterpiece on the part of Jokic. And the way he makes really athletic guys look inept and incapable of guarding him is really fascinating to me.
Unbelievable couple of wins. Nuggets have trailed by double figures in both games, I think by 15 or more in both games, and have come back to win both at home. Just unbelievable stuff from the Nuggets. They're going to have to play better at some point, like from start to finish. They have not played a full 48-minute game yet in these playoffs out of the two games.
It's coming.
But it does feel like a warm-up, right? It feels like the engines are starting to fire and they're starting to get it together. And a win like last night can really be a difference maker. This happens in playoff runs. For teams that go on to win a title, there's a game that happens that sort of propels them forward into the next stratosphere. And, you know, maybe this was that one for the Nuggets. I'm very curious. And on the other side, the Lakers, you know, where did they go from here? Legs, after the game, I don't want to make too big of a deal of this because you can get into the hot take territory very easily. But one thing I always pay attention to is what does a team say after a loss? And last night, all of the Lakers players complained about the officiating and complained about the strategies coming from the team. Are we making the right adjustments? And I hear that even if they're proper complaints, when I hear that, I go, that's a team that is probably over the line now. You know, like they've moved over the line of belief to the point of now we're just, you know, the pain is there and now we're starting to look around and almost finger point a little bit. I don't want to be too hot takey on it, but just the stuff coming out of the Lakers locker room last night to me was pretty discouraging on top of a gut-wrenching loss. Do you agree?
I agree. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, look, I will say this. The point LeBron made, and this is the soundbite that's going everywhere today about the call, the non-call, the reversal on D'Angelo Russell. He's 100% right about that. That is a foul. He got hit in the face.
It was crazy. That's such a crazy call.
It's a crazy foul. And, you know, and actually, there's a similar – we're going to talk about it in a second, but there's a similar play in the Philly Knicks game on a call that was reversed when clearly – DiVincenzo was fouled by Kyle Lowry. Clearly. I mean, it's like, and that's one of the problems the league has with replays. I mean, your eyes aren't going to lie to you, particularly when there's contact. Like, it's one thing on these plays where it turns out, you know what, a guy hit the ball and not the arm, or a guy went vertical with two hands up and you didn't know that live. And you watch replay and go, okay, that's kind of subject to interpretation. Or even a lean when a guy's trying to draw a charge, did he lean at shoulder? So now it's, okay, that's subject to interpretation. When a guy gets hit across the face or a guy gets raked across the arm when he's got the basketball, everybody knows, even the most novice basketball fan, that that's a foul. So LeBron's point on that call is accurate. The problem is when you bring that up in this context, had no bearing on the outcome of the game. None. That's not what transpired in the fourth quarter of the game. So it sounds like you are almost making a deposit for a future return. Is that what LeBron is trying to do? To set up the next couple games in LA and what he thinks are the short end of the stick on calls? I don't think that stuff works. I've never thought it works. And it does sound like you're getting away from the real essence of what happened. Your team was one jump shot short from a multitude of guys of winning the game. You didn't make the shots when they had to be made late. And I could give you three or four possessions that that's the case. You probably win the game. And you had no answer for them on the other end of the floor. That's why you lost the game. It's not about that. The officiating, much more directly involved in the Philadelphia-New York game. And we're going to get involved in that because the timing of what we're talking about. You know, and I didn't personally, I wasn't watching that game thinking the Lakers were getting hosed. At no point was I thinking that. But LeBron is right about that call. He's right about that one call. Yeah. Yeah. And no question. That absolutely got hit in the face. That should have been a foul. No doubt about it. That had nothing to do and no bearing on the fourth quarter.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break because on the other side, this was only one heartbreaking loss, the Lakers. On the other side, the 76ers, maybe even more heartbreaking, honestly, than what the Lakers had because they blew it. As much as anything. So we'll get to that on the other side, as well as the other games that are coming up tonight, the game twos. We'll preview those and talk about what happened in game one of those series. But first, let me tell you about the Game Time app. Tickets to the Nuggets game last night, by the way, good deals on Game Time app. I always check $100 for the upper levels for a playoff game. I'm telling you right now, I was at the arena. That was more than worth whatever the ticket prices were on Game Time. I promise you being there was worth whatever money you would have had to part ways using the Game Time app. And you know when you use the Game Time app, you get the best deals. They have flash deals, zone deals, last minute tickets. You can check what the view looks like from every single seat in the house right there on the app. And they have that all-in pricing button at the top that allows you to know exactly what your ticket price is going to be when you check out. They don't just have sports events. They also have concert events, festivals, a whole bunch of different things you can find out what's going on in your area. Maybe if you're, you know, Lakers fans, you want to try to get the momentum back in game three, you're in Los Angeles, hop on the Game Time app, look there. Nuggets fans, if you want to counter that, you live in Los Angeles, hop on the Game Time app and check out tickets and purchase them there. Create an account, use code ALLNBA, ALLNBA for $20 off your first purchase. Again, create an account and use that code ALLNBA for $20 off. Last minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed. Also want to tell you about the presenting sponsor of this show, DraftKings Sportsbook. Right now, from the play-in tournament all the way through to the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. There's three games tonight. You can do that parlay, all three of them, and try to pick the winner. Does every team, all the 0-1 teams bounce back? Wouldn't be the worst bet tonight if you wanted to go Suns, Mavs, Pacers and see three series go 1-1. That'd be an interesting parlay. I'll bet you get great odds. You can hop on the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and lay that down. Or maybe you go with the favorites. You think everybody's going up 2-0. You can do that as well. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code ALLNBA. New customers right now get a deal. Bet $5. You get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you use code ALLNBA. That's code ALLNBA, A-L-L-N-B-A, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, back here, segment two of the All-NBA Show with me and Legler. We're live every day this week from here on out. All the way through Friday, we're going to be breaking down these playoff games. If you missed the Nuggets segment, that was in segment one. You can rewind and watch that. But now we move on to the other phenomenal game in the association last night, and that is, of course, the Knicks stealing victory from the jaws of defeat in the Garden against the 76ers. Maxi goes for 35 points. Embiid goes for 34. Those two guys did a lot of really great stuff. But in the clutch of this game, unlike the Nuggets-Lakers game where I felt the Nuggets, it was you saw it coming piece by piece, making some big plays. This one all came down to the absolute wire. Crazy back-to-back three-point plays from the Knicks when they were down 5 points to steal the lead. And then the Sixers only get a prayer shot from Embiid at the other end. They end up going down. Legs. This was one of the crazier finishes I've seen in terms of I thought it was over and there was no chance, but this is why you play it out. Two miracle plays in a row from the Knicks to take the lead. What stood out?
Man, oh, man. So, yeah, I thought the same. And, in fact, I had a very ill-timed tweet I sent out last night because before the series, I was doing some TV at ESPN, and there was a soundbite that had been circulated where I said, we're going to find out now. And I think you and I actually talked about this too, because we know Embiid's hobbled. And I said, now we're going to find out who Tyrese Maxey really is. Not that we didn't know already. He's like an emerging player. But the question is, right, is he that to make up for whatever 30, 35, 40%, whatever Embiid is not? Is Maxey on that level? I said, he's got a chance in this series to climb some rungs on that ladder in terms of how we view him and his pecking order in the league. And he hits that three, and he was incredible in the fourth quarter. He hits that three to give him, you know, he's got two 30-point games now back-to-back. The three puts him up four. Thought it was over. Nick called timeout. I tweeted, like, I basically reposted that sound that I had on TV because I thought this is the moment, right? This was Maxey's deal. He delivered the goods here. His partners hobbled, and he basically made the big plays down the stretch. And then all hell breaks loose in this game. To the point where when it ended, I still couldn't really believe what I had just watched. So I went back, I watched it all again today, and there are so many things that the Philadelphia 76ers did not do in the last minute of the game, and an equal number of things that the Knicks capitalized on. You can't discern the two. Then obviously there's the third component. Officiating helped. It did help the Knicks. I think Maxey got fouled on that play when he got the inbounds pass from Kyle Lowry in the backcourt, got trapped, bumped, fell, lost the ball that led to the DiVincenzo three to give them the lead. He got fouled on that play. There's no question in my mind he got fouled on that play multiple times, really held before he got the ball, bumped after he got the ball. But let's just leave that there. He got fouled. If they call it, he goes to the line. Sixers probably win the game.
Can I ask a question real quick in the middle of this? Let me ask a question. Because I agree with you, he got fouled. But in those moments, I thought he both got fouled, but also took a dive, meaning that it was almost like, oh, I got fouled, so I'm going to accentuate and get the call here. And in that moment, to me, I always say, err on the side of caution. Don't leave it in the official's hands and force them to make a play. And so that one, so I understand and I agree. And if I'm a Sixers fan, I'm screaming at me right now as I'm saying this. But part of me goes, this is why you don't do that stuff. You never know what an official's going to call. Don't leave it to them.
No, listen, you're 100% right. And I've been saying it all morning about Maxey. The bottom line is this. Yes, I think he got fouled. At all cost, you've got to stay on your feet. Stay on your feet no matter what. He didn't get hit to that extent to force him to the ground. He lost his balance a little bit. You've got to protect that basketball like your life depends on it. And he didn't. And then, Adam, he goes to the ground. And when he first goes to the ground, he's laying in a way that he could have even had the ball sort of pushed out to the right side of his body, like toward the sideline, and been able to hopefully scream for a timeout or force them to come over his back and try to get the ball. He tried to roll the ball through Josh Hart's legs. So he willingly gave that up. He was trying to get rid of it to get it to somebody. You have to have better ball security. So, yes, part of it's on Maxey, and that's all they care about in Philly today is they think they got screwed by the refs between that and then not giving Nick Nurse the timeout, which we're going to get into in a second. That's all they're focused on in Philly. They're not focused on, number one, what we just said. Actually, let me go back before that real quick. The three that Brunson hit, Okay. Right before he hits that three, he drives in, splits two defenders at the top of the key. He trips, falls. He goes to the ground with Kyle Lowry. It's basically looks like a 50-50 with Brunson and Lowry. And I stopped the play today to look. There are four people right there, equidistant from the ball. Two Knicks and two Sixers. Both Knicks beat both Sixers to the ball. DiVincenzo comes out of it with out of the pack, dribbles out. It leads to the Brunson three. So there's one opportunity to win the game. Get the loose ball. Somebody dive on the floor, beat the Knicks to the – they don't do it. Okay, Brunson hits the three, lucky bounce. He gets the three. Kyle Lowry, ball goes through the net. Next opportunity to win the game. What's the rush? What's the rush to get the ball in your hands out of bounds? It's literally a nanosecond. He's got the ball and he's out of bounds already. The clock is now starting to count. You take a look at the Sixers. None of those three guys right in front of him, first of all, they're all bunched together. Embiid, Harris, Batum. None of those guys are going near the basketball. They're now going toward half court. The only guy who makes an effort to get it is Maxey, but by the time he breaks free, you're at 3.5 seconds. I counted it. If you're Kyle Lowry, you've got to feel that a second too. Okay, you wanted to get in quick and see if we can do that before they say, okay, great. You better be sure if you're going to take the ball out of bounds that quick that you're going to get into somebody. And if you can't, take a look. Crowded traffic. I don't like the way this looks. Timeout. You don't have to rely on Nick Nurse. You can call timeout. The referee's standing right there. So that's another opportunity to win the game. Obviously, then Maxey comes in, gets bumped, fouled. Loose ball. They pick it up. Shot. Here comes your next opportunity to win the game. How about a defensive rebound in that situation? Isaiah mm-hmm. Hartenstein runs in, grabs it in traffic, sets up the last shot by DiVincenzo to win the game, and then Hartenstein makes a game-saving defensive play. They had multiple opportunities, Adam, multiple opportunities, aside from the officiating, to win the game, and they did it. The Knicks, just their desire to come up with those basketballs in three different occasions led to a guy finally knocking down a shot and giving them the win.
There's this great scene in Yellowstone. You ever watch Yellowstone Legs, the TV show? Have you seen that one?
I've seen every episode. Absolutely.
There you go. So there's one where Kevin Costner's character, you know, punches some security guard or something as he's walking through. And as he walks out, the guy says, you know, you sucker punched me. Otherwise, I would have got you. And he said, you wouldn't have got me. I'm just meaner than you. This is kind of like that play you're talking about with Hartenstein. It wasn't a lucky bounce. It wasn't, you know, oh, this unfortunate, this or that. It was, nope, he just was a little meaner than you in that moment. He comes crashing in from the three-point line, just jumps as high as he can, grabs it, kicks it out, and obviously the rest is history. And by the way, Hartenstein made a lot of those plays in the clutch, just a lot
sure
of
them. Did, man.
they were chickens with their heads cut off. We're down, we're desperate, and they just started going crazy. And to me, that's such a big part of basketball. Who's the meaner one? Who, you know, and last night the Knicks were the meaner team in the final minutes.
Listen, I'm sitting there watching that go down in the fourth quarter. The number of little floaters he was hitting on those pocket passes, like he doesn't miss that shot anymore. It's crazy to watch him. He's just so good at that shot. And I'm thinking to myself, man, the only thing that could be better than this for Adam is if the Nuggets hit a game winner at the buzzer. And sure enough, they delivered because you're literally watching your guy do his thing. He gets the buckets. He gets the key offensive rebound. He makes things. That's the defensive play of the year for the New York Knicks. The block on Maxey, which was not an average block. That was an incredible block. Maxey going full speed. He's a blur. He's at the rim. He's about to lay it in. And Hartenstein, by the way, like a hair later, the ball's on the glass, and that's going to be a goaltend. He timed it perfectly to block that from behind. To you know, basically preserve the win. And thinking, man, Adam's got to be in heaven right now. You know, he's sitting there, he's watching the Nuggets game wearing a Hartenstein jersey.
Yeah,
and he's enjoying every second of this. So you can't ask more from what those guys did. By the way, there's other subtle little contributions mixed in there, and this is where the Sixers have come up small by comparison. Because Mac, look, Embiid's playing clearly hobbled, still had incredible numbers because he could still make shots. Maxey was sensational in this game. Go up and down the rest of those guys, man. Oubre, where were you? Two field goals. Where were you, Buddy Hield? He looked terrified to be on the court. Terrified to be on the court. He couldn't get open, and he didn't want to handle the ball at all. So he's basically no factor in the game. Kyle Lowry, you can't even ask that of him at this stage of his career. That's not his role. He didn't give him much offensively, and Tobias Harris struggled again. So now look at the Knicks. It's not just the guys we talked about. Brunson struggled again the whole night. Still made some plays when he had to. Hartenstein was great. DiVincenzo was great late. OG Anunoby had some big baskets, and Bogdanovich hit back-to-back threes that were really important in this game.
They were huge, so huge.
And McBride had a three-point play on a pull-up jumper that really mattered. So it necessarily isn't always about accumulating numbers. It's about the timing of your contribution, as small as it may be, in terms of number of possessions. It's critical to the game. And the Knicks had a bunch of those guys do that, in addition to all of the hustle stuff we're talking about at the end of the game. The Knicks believed that they could do what they did. They could take that from them. And the Sixers did not play winning basketball when they had to, regardless of the officiating. And then last point on the timeout. Listen, Nick Nurse, I thought he was being disingenuous. Okay, that was a lukewarm attempt at a timeout. First of all, he was looking at the action. He's looking at the action, and he's got his hands kind of like this. But he's not looking at the official at first. Finally, he did. And by the time he got demonstrative to make that call, the ball was dislodged. It's not the official's job to be staring at Nick Nurse. There's two officials, one on the baseline and one up near half court. They're both watching that scrum, basically, is what that was with Maxey and Hart and DiVincenzo. They're looking at that. They're not looking at Nick Nurse. So you have to do what he said after the game, which is, oh, I guess I got to run on a court. Well, hello. Have you ever seen Eric Spoelstra in those situations? The dude runs onto the floor, and he's you can't miss it. There's no way that you're going to miss that. He was sort of tepid about it because he got distracted by the action. And by the time he really wanted it, the ball was loose. So I really don't have a fault with the officials, no matter what Nick Nurse said. I don't have a fault with the officials. I have more of a problem with the lack of a call on Maxey. I think that's a foul. You got to protect ball handlers and shooters in late game situations, and I don't think they did a very good job of that. The timeout, you got to go about that much more animated, in a much more animated way, to make sure that they give you that call when you want it, and it had to come sooner than it did. He waited way too long to try to make that happen.
I love that you made that point, because I think you're right about it, that you've got to be, you can't, again, it's just like the fall down, right? You can't leave it to the officials, and the half-hearted timeout, the hold on, what are we doing here? That, like, don't leave it to the official. If you want a timeout, you're screaming, you're letting them know you want a timeout, and you got to do it. Before we got to move on, but I want to finish on two guys, Miles McBride, who I thought, you mentioned he had a big shot. He had a big stint. Like, he had a big fourth quarter stretch there where he made several big offensive and defensive plays. He continues to amaze me. And then Jalen Brunson, who we've been gassing up on the show, he's kind of been rough, I think, in these first two games. I mean, you disagree. So we're going to get a disagreement.
No. I think that's an understatement. Rough.
Oh, yeah.
Rough is a euphemism for what I've been watching.
Okay. I'm being diplomatic here, but I'll hand it to you. So you can talk about, if you have something quick on McBride and something big on Jalen Brunson, but those two guys deserve mention.
McBride continues to be one of the great stories in this league, man. One of the great stories in this league, because he plays both ends, to your point. The guy really competes defensively. And then he's got unwavering confidence and unlikely confidence for a player that's sort of taken this path to be here. It's amazing to watch. I'm happy for him. Brunson, I agree. Look, there was a point last night when I was watching the game, and I was thinking, I'm saying to myself, damn, man, pass the ball. It's literally like, sometimes it's like watching Iverson back in the Philly days with that team, with a bunch of guys that defended and set screens and got the ball back to him. Right. I'm like, wow. I mean, he you're not feeling it. And you're like, you're just shooting time after time after time, and you're not in any kind of rhythm. And I understand, man, that's kind of how he's played all year. But when it's not going, it can be kind of ugly. And that's what I've seen out of Jalen Brunson in these two games. And now that's the bad news. The good news is for them, they've won two games despite that. Imagine when he finally, which he's going to, probably next game, he's going to have an efficient night. So what happens to the Sixers when Brunson puts together a 13-for-21 game with 4 or 5 threes and some free throws, and he's pushing 40 and he does it efficiently? If you can't beat the Knicks with what Brunson has looked like in these first two games and basically having a game in hand late in game two. I mean, I said it about the Nuggets Lakers. I say the same thing about this. That felt like series. That was more than just a game. That felt like the series. And I picked the Sixers, if Embiid was healthy, because this is pre-injury, to go to the conference finals the way he looked when he came back from his initial injury. And then all bets were off when I saw him against Miami. I said it. I picked the Knicks to win the series, and they're going to win the series because he's just not right. He just can't affect the game in enough ways. That was their chance to at least like really make this interesting. Can they win two games at home? I guess they could, although I'm worried about some of their guys playing at home. It's a rough environment in Philadelphia when you're not playing well. And I look at guys like Hield and Oubre and Tobias Harris right now, they're not going to find their mojo at home. That's harder in that city because those people are all over you from the very beginning of the game. Your first miss, you hear the groans. It's harder. It's actually easier on the road, I think, to get going when you play for that team. So you got a bunch of dudes not in a good rhythm besides the two stars. So I don't know that they win two games at home. And maybe the Knicks end up winning this thing in five games because Embiid's not going to miraculously start feeling spry over the next 48 hours or 72 hours. It's not going to happen.
I will say I give Joel Embiid a lot of credit. We just talked about the Lakers in the post game kind of going, complaining about this or that. I like Joel Embiid in the post game said, we're going to win the series. And I don't know if I believe him. I don't know if I buy him. But your best player needs to have that energy after a moment like that. When you're that down, there needs to be somebody that says, everybody get in here. It's not over. Those were heartbreakers, but we're chipping away at them. And we got this. I got this. We got this. And I was impressed with Joel Embiid's comments, at least, to say that. And now we go to Philadelphia. Look, Knicks won two games at home. They were both tough. Now you go to Philadelphia. Let's see if Philadelphia has a response. I'm into that series, even though I would prefer it to be 1-1. All right, let's get to a speed run here. This segment presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. And I'm going to start with this. So we have three games tonight, and they are all incredible, or at least on paper, they should all be incredible. The meme, don't embarrass us in front of Tim Legler, unfortunately had to make an appearance over the weekend as the Dallas Mavericks completely humiliate themselves, falling behind by 20 points in the first quarter, and drop game one in kind of blowout fashion. So what went wrong in game one, and do you expect it to change tonight in game two?
What got away from them was their inability to make perimeter shots at the beginning of the game. I mean, they can't be worse collectively shooting the basketball, and I'll put Luka in there as well. I mean, all those step-back threes that he missed early, and then any role player that had a chance at a look, they couldn't convert. And they were at the exact same time, they were having a very difficult time guarding the Clippers on the other end of the floor. James Harden was sensational. Right? I've been hard on James Harden throughout, for a long time now in this league. I don't have an agenda. He was great in this game, sensational. James Harden continues to play at a high level like that or close to that. Clippers are going to win the series. One of the reasons I think I picked Dallas to win the series and to go to the conference finals was because I don't expect James Harden to be able to do that game in and game out. At this stage. But this might go back to what you and I said in the very beginning of the season for him or when he first joined the Clippers. He's in a perfect lane. Like even though Kawhi wasn't there, it doesn't matter. He's still in the same spot where the pressure is not going to be at him. In fact, they lose a series and Kawhi either plays limited, doesn't play, plays poorly. They're going to be talking about Kawhi Leonard, not him. And I think that is the difference between this experience and what he had in Philly and what he had in Houston. It's not all about him. So therefore, he can be in a more relaxed state, and he certainly was in game one. And at the exact same time he was going off, the Mavericks could throw the ball in the ocean. And now you get down 20, 25 points in a game. Good luck digging your way out. I expect a significant response from the Dallas Mavericks in game two. And I'm going to start with Luka Doncic. Like, Luka is going to do everything he has to do to carry this team offensively. He's going to need help. He's certainly going to need more contributions than he got, which was basically Kyrie Irving, and that was it in this game. But it's going to be about Luka, and I have a feeling at the end of game two, that's going to be the singular focus. Luka Doncic is going to do something special in game two, I believe it, to get this series even.
I think it's interesting with James Harden. You know, he comes over, and one of his first quotes is, I am the system, right? You're joining Kawhi Leonard for that. And everybody rolls their eyes at it, and rightfully so. He's not the most self-aware guy. But to his credit, he's a really good system. when the ball is in his hands and everybody's playing off him, one of the best we've ever seen. You know, maybe not playoff success or what have you, and that's most important, but he really is good at doing his thing when the team is around him. And with Kawhi Leonard, a late scratch that was probably never a late scratch, let's be honest, this is the thing about Kawhi Leonard. They might know he's out for a month, but he's going to be day-to-day, you know, until that news drops. But it becomes Harden's game, and he took advantage of it and was unbelievable. That game tonight, to me, I just feel like the stakes are so high. Can I ask, if the Mavs lose tonight, can they still win the series in your mind?
Yes, they can. They definitely can. And look, there's not – I know how we feel about most series that get to 2-0 because immediately the math, you go, okay, four out of five now. Like, that's a lot. That's hard to do. It's because of the Luka Doncic factor. That's that simple. I'd say the same thing about Jokic, you know. No, it's not going to be over. But if you're the road team and you drop two road games, no, it's not over. Until you get at least a chance to go home and hold serve on home court and how great he can be in a given moment and carry a team, no, it's not going to be over. I do think it's important, clearly, because then you got a chance to go home and take control of the series rather than going home fighting for your life to stay alive. You win a game, two, you now have a chance to go home and take control. And that's a strong position to come from if you're Dallas. I'm going to say one last thing. I don't know what got into Zubac at the start of this game, but if I'm Daniel Gafford, you better look at that film, and that should be embarrassing to you. The way you got treated, you got absolutely – that looked like a father playing against his son in the driveway in the beginning of that game, the way he backed him down and did whatever he wanted to do to him. That clearly was their strategy to go at, got him in foul trouble. It took away his confidence. He's been sensational, complete non-factor in the game, and I think it was the way Zubac went at him. If that's what it's going to be, you better front him, three-quarter him, do what you have to make sure that does not happen again, because Zubac is a good player. He is not a player that should ever operate offensively the way that he did in the first 6 minutes of that game. So that's the challenge for Gafford, Lively, whoever else plays, because everybody was pretty much a non-factor in this game besides Luka and Kyrie. Everybody's got to answer the bell. I just think Luka's going to be the guy to set the stage.
We can move on to the Suns and the Timberwolves now. Another one. Game one was not great. That was a butt-whipping from the Minnesota Timberwolves. To the surprise, by the way, the Suns, dog walked them every time in the regular season, and then you get to the playoffs. Minnesota controlled it really from the second quarter on. So what are you looking for to be different now in that series in game two? What do the Suns have to do that they didn't do in game one?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me is I'm gonna go with Devin Booker. Devin Booker, listen, what – this is why you pair up multiple superstar offensive players. And Booker is a star offensive player. He might not be a superstar in this league, but that dude can get numbers anytime he wants. He did not play well. He was just – Durant played well offensively. But against this team, there's a reason you have multiple star offensive players. It's going to take it against this defense. And I thought Devin Booker, 5-for-16, that's not getting it. That's just not good enough. Devin Booker – knowing the way he typically responds to these, because I think the dude's a fighter, I think he's a competitor. I think Devin Booker, watch the first 6 minutes of this game and see if Devin Booker is an intent on getting himself into that elite level rhythm. I think it's more important for him than Durant. Durant can find that, I think, anytime in the game. Booker's a guy, I think, that the starts matter. So look for that in this one. He's got to be way better than he was in the first game to help Kevin Durant.
And Timberwolves have great guys to throw at him, and Jaden McDaniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker. By the way, you mentioned earlier my guys. Great weekend for my guys. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Trey Murphy, Isaiah Hartenstein. I was eating this weekend, Legs, watching my guys go off.
Living a dream. I think I could picture you just sitting at home and like layering up with all of their jerseys, and as each game unfolds, just ripping one off, getting ready for the next guy.
Time for the next guy. There we go. That was exactly what happened. How did you know? And then we have the last one, Pacers-Bucks. This was one. Pacers owned the regular season. They were talking. Damian Lillard turned the page, though, turned the clock back and got the win. So what has to happen in this in game two tonight for the Pacers to get back?
Well, I guess let's start with get Damian Lillard under control beginning of the game. So that goes without saying, doing 35 points in the first half. Now, if you're the Pacers, you do take some solace over the way the second half went. And some people might discount that because it was a big lead and, you know, Lillard went off and pretty much that was, you know, how much more do you need to do? That's a game's worth it. I get it. Bottom line is they did hold Milwaukee to 40 points in the second half. And the Pacers were much better defensively the second half of the year. It's in there. So that has to happen. And then listen, you can't get all the praise if you're Halliburton and then not deliver in a big way. He has to be a guy that puts his imprint all over this game to get it even. Because we're going to see Giannis at some point, we believe. So I think for them to have a chance, I think they need to win this game. And I thought they had a great chance to win this series. Damian Lillard surprised me with that performance. Surprised me. That was Damian Lillard at his peak in Portland. Haven't seen it this year, really, in a Bucks uniform. He surprised me with that. He probably surprised the Pacers with that. So let's see what your response is, and let's see what your response is, Tyrese Halliburton.
Some great games, man. First week down, you can go ahead and cue that outro music, Emma. First weekend down, 3 days into the playoffs, already living up to the hype. We've got surprises. We have some buzzer beaters. We have blown games. Unbelievable. And then tonight, we're rewarded with that slate. Suns, Timberwolves, Pacers, Bucks, Mavs, Clippers. All of those are going to be absolutely phenomenal. We did get one super chat, Emma. What was it? What do we have here? Somebody paid for us. She Love Tommy says, Denver lost 14 to 16 points on in and out in shots in the third quarter. That's basketball. That's basketball, yeah, man. It happens. Like, I will say this. The Lakers are not a good defensive team, but they have great defensive players. And I actually think they have disrupted Denver very nicely in both games, both game one and game two. They've had moments. Yes, Denver shot poorly, but you got to give credit when it happens two games in a row, especially on your home court. If you shoot, teams shoot poorly at their home court. Defense is doing something right. I think Anthony Davis has owned the paint in a way that has stymied Jamal Murray getting to the rim. So I tip my hat to the Lakers, but you tip your hat to the Nuggets as well for overcoming it. Legs, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, just that last super chat is a great observation. I was actually noting the same thing. That many balls going in and out in one quarter, one half. Nuggets had a ton, but until they start giving guys a half a point for those, that's not going to matter. that is how basketball works some nights. Listen, just give them credit, man. You watched the champion last night respond in a huge way in a big moment, and they got it done. So kudos to them.
And kudos to them, everybody. And kudos to all of you for tuning in. What a great start to our week. We're back tomorrow. We're back Thursday. We're back Friday. Every day the rest of the week, breaking down these great playoff games. Thanks so much for watching. Make sure you're subscribed and hit that like button. We'll see you tomorrow. Y'all silly like the mayor.